War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Good morning, everybody. This is Jason Miller with episode 70 of War Room Impeachment, joined here by Raheem Kassam in the historic Breitbart Embassy. We have Stephen K. Bannon on the line, remote from New York City. And we also have here special guest Michael Walsh, author of Rules for Radical Conservatives. Going to be hearing a lot more from him about how he sees yesterday's UK elections, the impeachment witch hunt, and a whole lot more. Steve Bannon, do you want to kick us off?
Yeah, I tell you, I want to, and I know we've got a historic day today because they're going to vote after this fiasco last night in the House, and we're going to get right to that. I think, Jason, they're coming in at 10 o'clock to vote, if I'm correct, on the Judiciary Committee.
Yes, sir. They're coming in at 10 after having postponed that at around 11 p.m. last night.
How was that? Just a quick assessment of that before we get to the U.K., because I know Michael and Raheem and I all have very strong opinions of how important this is for 2020.
Have a throwdown.
How do you think that was handled last night by Jerry Nadler? Did Nadler prove again that it's just this thing's just beyond him?
Well, I think it shows the fundamental shortcoming Democrats have, that they think the American public wants to hear more bloviating from Democratic politicians on impeachment. So literally, Steve, yesterday, and for the audience, yesterday was literally a snooze fest in the Judiciary Committee. Nadler fell asleep in the middle of his own hearing. That's how boring this thing was. There wasn't anything new. I mean, even had the Jeffrey Toobins of the world saying that Trump had essentially already won this thing. But Steve, we're going to get to this, but certainly a number of breaking things coming out of this morning, including the news that Pat Cipollone, the White House General Counsel, will be leading President Trump's case in the Senate. Some what the ramifications will that be for the Senate trial. And then also, we're seeing a breaking story from NBC News this morning that House Republicans have their sights set on 8 vulnerable Democrats. There could be as many as potentially 8 defections now from the Democratic caucus against impeachment.
Nancy Pelosi actually said yesterday, Jason, I like your take on this. She actually said at the microphone that she is not going to whip this vote, that people have to vote their conscience. Do you believe her?
Well, two things can't be true at once on this particular issue, because if Democratic strategists are saying, based on their phone calls, that they don't expect to lose more than, say, half a dozen, with then Pelosi saying that she's not whipping it, it's a vote of conscience. What that is, that's whipping it right there. That's saying that unless you vote for both articles of impeachment, your new office will be in the Ford House Office Building across 395. Actually, they might put you across the Anacostia River down into Ward 8. And we're never going to hear from you ever again. That's how Nancy Pelosi whips.
Now, did they actually target? Have they announced who the 8 are? I know we've got the Dirty 30. We've narrowed it down to 24. Do we have any idea who this 8 are? Are they talking about who they are right now?
Yeah, it's many of the usual suspects we've heard before. They're all freshman Democrats that are in districts President Trump won in 2016. So folks we've talked about on the program, like Ben McAdams from Utah, Steve, your good friend Anthony Brindisi from the Utica area of New York, in Virginia, where you have 2 of these districts. We did see Congresswoman Luria from Virginia 2 announce yesterday that she is going to be for both articles of impeachment. And Steve, this is a buried lead in some of these stories this morning. The fact that you're now having Luria yesterday and Connor Lamb just came out within this last hour and said he's definitely on board with both articles. He's a vulnerable Democrat from a it's kind of a suburban, exurban Pittsburgh area in Pennsylvania. The fact that Democrats are having to wheel out vulnerable members saying they're willing to walk the plank shows you how nervous they are.
How do you take when you have Connor Lamb and these? They're making a decision. They're making a decision now and over the next couple of days that they're going to need the support of Nancy Pelosi and the Democratic apparatus versus the swing voters and the Trump voters that you might be able to get to support them. They're making a decision right now. They need that support.
I'm going to take it a much more cynical direction, Steve, and say that they're looking at their post-congressional career, and they want to make sure that when they come back as a lobbyist, they're going to be able to get in to see Nancy Pelosi.
Have a meeting.
be able to get a meeting, or if somehow...
Can you describe, but it's for a second, for this is a grassroots show. Explain what that is. Explain how important that is when people actually, that when they come, it's a profession, it's a business. People have to understand that. What are they thinking when they think downrange like that?
Right. Right, exactly. This is no longer Mr. Smith goes to Washington. This is when you run for Congress and you become a member of Congress, you enter into this permanent political class where even after your congressional career, there'll be certain doors that are open to you, whether that's joining a future administration from someone from your own party, or you join kind of the rotating cast of lobbyists and strategic advisors in Washington, D.C. And so if you're someone, say you're Connor Lamb, and you want to have a bright future in Democratic politics, maybe in administration, maybe as a lobbyist, you want to be able to call a Nancy Pelosi or a Steny Hoyer or someone like that and say, can I get in to see you and let me go ahead and bring along client X, you know, some company from China or something, to come right in to see you. And if they know that you wouldn't stand with them in this pivotal moment, they're not going to take the meeting. But if they know that you took this and, you know, hey, sorry, Connor, we lost your seat. There's probably
if you took one for the team, you took a bullet, the doors will be always open to you.
Yeah. And so, Steve, one quick thing I got to point out here that's another buried lead this morning. So Ann Kirkpatrick, who is a freshman this time from Arizona, but she's had this rotating seat in Arizona a number of times before. She said to Vox, and this is a great buried lead, they were asking her the question about where she stood on impeachment. She admitted on the record she had already made her mind up on impeachment after the Mueller report came out. And so this is really, I mean, this is such a buried lead in the Vox story.
Wow.
Because it had nothing to do with Ukraine. This has nothing to do with the July 25th call with President Zelensky. This has to do with the Mueller report, which, by the way, cleared President Trump.
Well, I want to bring Michael. Michael was, besides being one of the most prominent intellectuals in the Trump movement and a great writer, he's got a new book coming out he'll talk about in January called Last Stands. But he was he was Andrew's first pick to run big government. So he was the first political editor we ever had at Breitbart. Michael, do you think, and particularly for these 31 Democrats, and I realize you've been spending a lot of time out of the country, but do you believe that they've made the case? Do you think they've made the case that these 31 can go back to their districts and sell to these Trump districts that the impeachment of Trump?
No, Steve, I don't. I listened to it all the way down, driving down from New England to Washington yesterday. And a more unimpressive presentation one can hardly imagine. It strikes me as very, very dubious that many of these people in swing districts are going to be able to hang on to their seat with such a razor-thin impeachment j'accuse as they've labored forth, you know, mightily, and they've brought forth this mouse. So I guess we'll find out what happens at 10.
So Jason and Raheem, is what Michael's saying, is they playing into Trump's hands? That after yesterday, if you actually paid attention to it and sat there and listened to it, it comes out as pretty thin gruel. That what Trump's saying and the messaging that he's doing right now, that it's a very thin impeachment. It's impeachment light. The abuse charges you still can't get your handle around, and the contempt of Congress, right? The obstruction of Congress. You really don't. It's not obstruction of justice. Do you think you think yesterday plays into Trump's hands?
Oh, absolutely. Because, again, there was nothing new. And in fact, there was criticism or commentary, depending on which side of the aisle you're from, yesterday on the committee that we're hearing the same things over and over. I mean, people have literally run out of things to say. We're kind of at the end of the internet. I mean, at least on Wednesday, we heard different stories about from the story of Esther, you know, some different things we hadn't quite heard before. But this is all the same rehash. And Steve, one other important thing I want to throw out here, Raheem and I were talking about this was we're guest hosting the John Fredericks Radio Show, which we're part of the John Fredericks Radio Network here with War Room Impeachment, about how Congresswoman Karen Bass from Los Angeles, who's now part of this permanent impeachment party, will be on CNN's State of the Union this weekend. And she's literally already calling for more efforts to impeach President
Trump. More impeachment.
Trump.
Another impeachment.
So that's what we're calling the PIP party, the permanent impeachment party. Literally, they are a nonstop turn down for what pro-impeachment effort. They're never going to stop stopping on this impeachment hunt. It shows you what TDS is doing to folks around the country.
Well listen, maybe get to the next segment, but the nullification project took a major blow yesterday in the United Kingdom, and I think the nullification project, of which Congressman Bass is part of, is taking a major blow right here. One of the things I saw, and I want to talk later in the show about it, is I thought there were some voices yesterday in the judiciary that should be on the Trump legal team when they go to the Senate. I think the world of Pat, but I think Gates and some other people stepped up yesterday, and these are the type of voices that the president is also going to need to crush the nullification project here in the United States.
Yeah, and what Steve is referring to, folks, just within this last hour, it's been announced that Pat Cipollone, the White House General Counsel, is going to be President Trump's lead legal strategist, his lead defender when this becomes a Senate trial. There's a lot to unpack here. The interview from Senator Mitch McConnell on Sean Hannity last night, where he said he'd be working hand in glove with Pat, the White House counsel. And the way that Senator McConnell was really referring to Pat as being an equal partner in this, in treating Pat as a principal last night, if you saw that interview, you wouldn't be at all surprised by this announcement. We're going to have more on that after the break. And Steve, as you foreshadowed, we'll be talking a lot about the UK elections. There's a China deal. This is War Room Impeachment, episode number 70 on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Raheem Kassam is reminding me, warroom.org. We're on Stitcher, Spotify, Salem Radio Network, and of course, Newsmax TV. We'll be back after this.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
And we are back. War Room Impeachment, episode number 70. Jason Miller here in the Breitbart Embassy, along with Raheem Kassam. Stephen K. Bannon is on the line, and we are joined by our special guest in studio here, Michael Walsh, author of Rules for Radical Conservatives and the upcoming book, Last Stands. Michael, want to get your take on, first of all, introduce yourself to the audience, make sure they know your long history in conservative politics and some of your experience with Breitbart back in the early days, but then also walk us into, we want to get your take on the UK elections from last night.
Sure. Well, as Steve mentioned, I was one of the founding editors of the Breitbart big sites. Mine was big journalism. Mike Flynn was big government. Alex Marlow was there as Andrew Breitbart's aide-de-camp. And it was quite a time. It was just four or five guys with laptops. And I made this point when I was in D.C. right after the election, talking with Steve and with Seb Gorka and some other friends, that in 2010, when we launched our sites, it was five guys with laptops. And then here we were six, 7 years later, and there was a candidate that one could argue quite convincingly came out of that group of people who would gather in Andrew's basement in Los Angeles or separately all around the country to try to make this movement happen. And so I think, you know, we should all be very proud of what we've done there. As Steve mentioned, I spend a lot of time out of the country. I live in Ireland. I'm an Irish-American. So I watch what's happening in the EU very carefully. And I think yesterday we see a confluence of movements, and I think history is like
that.
These
are the UK elections where we saw Boris Johnson, the Conservative Party, get this massive win. I believe it's now 76 more seats than all of the other parties combined. I believe I'm right on that.
It's close to 80, yeah, the last I looked. But again, like the Trump election, no one saw this coming except everyone who was on our side, and you could feel the groundswell happening. I was thrilled when I got in here late last night to see how well Johnson had done. But all of these things happened. They don't happen in a vacuum. The Trump election didn't happen in a vacuum. This Brexit, multiple Brexit elections didn't happen in a vacuum. And I think as a historian, I like to watch the big picture. And I think right now you're looking at, without offending all of our British friends, you're looking at the breakup of the UK. I don't see how the UK survives this now. Scotland, the National Party there, beat the bejesus out of the Labour Party. And they are very highly in favor of Scottish nationalism and independence. Northern Ireland got pushed very much closer to the Republic, what we call the Six Counties. The fact that there's no customs anymore in Ireland, I like it. I like to drive to Belfast for dinner and come back the next day without any British soldiers pointing guns at me. No offense, Raheem.
I'll be there, don't worry.
So we kind of like this. And if Leo Varadkar, who is our Taoiseach, our Prime Minister, would take advantage of it, my goodness, the world could change almost overnight with the breakup of the Britain from the EU and the breakup of the UK, and a whole new Anglosphere could come
into
effect.
Wow, so this is, Michael, this is big. Again, we have Michael Walsh, author of Rules for Radical Conservatives. Wow. Raheem Kassam, you are our UK expert here in-house, obviously someone who is the wingman for Nigel Farage and the Brexit movement, and tons of experience in the UK. I want to hear from you. Number one, react to Michael's take there. This could lead to the breakup of the UK. And I want to know from you, what do last night's elections mean for the US?
Yeah, well, let me just say this. As an English nationalist, bring it on. the majority of Britain's economy emanates from London. The Scots have sucked at the teat of England for so very long. And so this is a growing movement in England to say, actually, the West Lothian question, the question as to what the relationship is like with inside the Union of the United Kingdom, it's imbalanced and it's imperfect and it needs serious looking at and reform. And one of those things may be a breakup. I don't, however, believe that that is going to happen. I think the Scottish National Party victory across Scotland yesterday was not an endorsement of another referendum, was not an endorsement of independence, the flagship policy of the SNP. I think it was more rejectionism of Corbyn's Labour Party than it was an acceptance of Nicola Sturgeon's will for another referendum. And also, I don't think we will get another referendum on that. I think despite how many seats she wins there, I don't think the Westminster Parliament will allow it. The country has been through so much recently.
Here's one of the things I think was dominant yesterday. It's populism is winning. You know, the party that Boris Johnson is going to go to is still they still think of Brexit. The Cambridge-Oxford set in the Conservative Party still think as their idea of Brexit is Singapore on the Thames, okay? The voters that put them into office, they're coming with a new Conservative Party, I think, that has a much more populist flavor to it. He turned down the deal with Farage to run his kind of co-parties that the Brexit Party could bring 35 to 50 seats. They got an 80-seat majority, but many of those seats from the old Labour voters, the Labour voters rejected this toxic combination of socialism and anti-Semitism where the Democratic Party of the United States is going. This big government socialism and this virulent anti-Semitism, I think, was rejected more so than even Jeremy Corbyn as a personality, but that program. And that, to me, is a lesson for the Democratic Party better listen to, because populism's on the rise. And the party that Boris Johnson is going to, I think it's more of the unclubbable than this kind of Oxford, Cambridge, the Tory party. They didn't want the contagion of populism is formally agreed to, Raheem and Michael, by having a deal with Nigel Farage. But I think the voters yesterday are sending a very different Conservative Party to London, and I think it has huge ramifications. Raheem, as you know, we have said from day one, and that's what we did at Breitbart and working on this, that the Brexit movement and the Trump movement are inextricably linked. You could see that in 16. We knew as soon as Brexit won and the scale it won at, that there really could be this populist uprising in the United States, and it happened. I think this tees up. The Democratic Party goes down the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren squad route, that Donald Trump could literally win a Reagan-type 1984 victory here.
Steve, I think you're right in saying the Democratic Party needs to focus in on the failures of Corbyn. But Boris Johnson is no populist, really. I mean, there's a veneer of populism.
I agree with that.
He's an Oxbridge High Tory. Yeah, he's an Oxbridge High Tory. He's a globalist. He believes in open borders. He believes in amnesty for illegals, etc., etc. And if you look at a granular level at the candidates that the Conservative Party sent to Westminster yesterday, they are of that same background. So it's not to say that nationalism is necessarily represented well in this new Conservative Party. In fact, the European Research Group, which is the populist nationalist, it's like our Freedom Caucus style caucus inside the Westminster Parliament, is now diluted in its influence in the Conservative Party as a result of an expanded Conservative Party. I want to get Michael's thoughts on that.
And we got about a minute and a half, Michael.
Yeah, well, I met with several members of the Conservative Party, senior members, last fall when I spent a lot of time in London.
I
know, but I do a lot of things for my country, both of my countries. I think Steve's absolutely right, though. This the larger vision, and one of the reasons Steve was successful with the Trump campaign was that this does not just happen in one country. So these movements become almost impossible to control once they expand. And Brexit was definitely a canary in the coal mine for our own elections.
Gotcha. And so, folks, we're here on episode 70 of War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, I'm Jason Miller. Our special guest today, Michael Walsh, author of Rules for Radical Conservatives and the upcoming Last Stands. Warroom.org is the website. You can hear us on the Salem Radio News Network, Newsmax TV, podcast, all of the platforms. Many people say we're on all the best platforms. That's Stitcher, Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud, Luminary,
Google Play.
That's the one I always forget, is Google Play. We are here, folks, 7 days a week from 9 to 10 a.m., and we're going to be here 7 days a week until President Trump is completely cleared of this impeachment witch hunt. Warroom.org. Be right back.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network.
And we are back in the historic Breitbart Embassy in Washington, D.C., Episode 70, War Room Impeachment. Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, I am Jason Miller, joined in studio today by our special guest, Michael Walsh, the author of Rules for Radical Conservatives. A lot of news this last 24 hours, last 20 hours or so, over the prospective China deal that the U.S. has struck. And we started to head down one direction for preparing the show and getting ready for where it's going to be. How big of a win is this going to be? How much your tariffs going to be rolled out? However, President Trump tweeted out 28 minutes ago, and I quote from President Trump, "The Wall Street Journal story on the China deal is completely wrong, especially their statement on tariffs. Fake news. They should find a better leaker." Also hearing comments coming out of China today that are critical of the deal and more critical of the U.S.'s framing of China and tariffs. Steve, are you back on, and can you take us from here? Okay. Michael, let's go. Michael, let's go to you, and I want to get your thoughts on this, and both Raheem and myself will jump in. But again, this is what we're approaching here coming up on Sunday. That's the December 15th deadline that President Trump set, that if China hadn't met we hadn't made enough progress in our trade talks, that more tariffs were coming into place. Essentially, we're going to tax and put a tariff on all Chinese goods. We're going to go up to 100%. Steve, are you back, and you want to dive in on this one? Okay, I thought we had Steve.
War Room to Steve Bannon.
Yes. Michael, dive in with your thoughts on the maybe China deal, maybe not China deal.
Yeah, Steve's been kidnapped by the Chinese.
Can't hear me. Before Washington, I just want to go to this Wall Street Journal article, Jason. I don't see a leak. I love Michael Pillsbury. You know, I advocate his book, The 100-Year Marathon. But I don't think this is a leak. It's Pillsbury walks you through what the tariffs are, what the deal is on the tariffs, right? So, I mean, and he's saying he's speaking for the team. He walks through these tariffs, and the president's saying it's wrong. So I don't think right now we have a real understanding of even what the deal is. Am I incorrect in that?
No, I think you're right. And again, to frame things for people, we've obviously for the longest time been talking about the fundamental trade relationship of the U.S. and China, and if the U.S. does nothing when it comes to the structural reforms, our industries of the future, AI, biotech, robotics, aeronautics, semiconductors, we will not be the world players in the way we are now in 20 years. That's what's driving this overall trade effort by President Trump, trying to get more access to the Chinese markets for our financial firms. There was talk of this quote-unquote skinny deal. That's really what the Wall Street Journal article was about, where the Chinese purchase more commodities, more agriculture from us, and allow some access by U.S. financial firms or more access into the Chinese market, which again, devil is always in the details. That's what the foundation of the story was, but obviously they wanted a big rollback on tariffs, which, as we know, that is our leverage point.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, you see, you know, Michael and Raheem jump in here, but as you see coming out of Beijing this morning, basically crickets. I mean, there's been no recognition, nothing in official Chinese media to ascertain this. I happen to think that this is another announcement of an agreement in principle, which you haven't seen this validated by the Chinese. And the devil's going to be in the details here, particularly the enforceability. Lighthizer looks like it's a rollback in tariffs potentially for massive increases in agriculture purchases. And I think that, you know, that's going to be about the enforceability of that. That's why this thing, and people are saying now, you are going to have to see the details. And I think President Trump's going to have to sell this. You know, I was on CNBC yesterday pretty adamant about the fact you can't trust the Chinese. But I think if this deal is at least structured the way it is, President Trump's going to have to go out and, I think, make a pretty big deal about trying to sell this.
So, Steve, I want to put this in context, that right now the tariffs that are in place that President Trump put on China to go and affect this economic behavioral change, none of these were in place when President Obama was in office. None of these were in place when President Bush was in office.
This is a fundamental shift. One of the reasons we're having this impeachment is this is President Trump's kind of reordering of the world economy around the industrial democracies, and to break this Chinese model that the elites in this country shipped all the manufacturing jobs to China. This is why President Trump won up in Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania. This is to the heart of it. President Trump came in with a policy that every Republican economist disagreed with, and it turns out Donald Trump was right and they were wrong. Tariffs have worked. Not only have we broken the back of the Chinese, their growth rate is really at zero. If you read the financial press, they're having nothing but a wave of collapses, of debt collapses, a failure to repay bonds in the tens of billions of dollars as their phony economy starts to crater because the Americans have finally stopped kowtowing to them. That is 100% Donald Trump. Trump has been right, and that jobs report shows you he's been right. As Peter Navarro says, tariffs work, and President Trump... And you know, this is why NAFTA is so important, you know, USMCA. On January 1st, the new Japan deal kicks in. Donald Trump has looked at trade as a centerpiece to reorganize the American economy back to manufacturing. It's working, and that's why the Chinese are so adamant about rolling back these tariffs.
And Steve, we've got about 10 seconds left. We're going to pick back up on China right when we get back. When we get Michael's thoughts, Raheem's thoughts. This is War Room Impeachment, Episode 70, John Frederick's Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room Impeachment on the John Frederick's Radio Network.
And we are back. War Room Impeachment, episode number 70. Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, myself, Jason Miller. Special guest today, Michael Walsh. Want to kick it. We're going to get it back to China in here one second with Michael's thoughts. But I do want to point out in kind of a reset for where things are with the impeachment, the House Judiciary Committee is going to be picking things back up at 10 a.m. this morning where they'll vote it out of committee. And Ted Deutch, one of our buddies, not really, but Democratic congressman from Florida, was just on CNN and admitted that the reason they postponed last night's vote was because it was too late for TV. But want to get back to the conversation we're having on China. Michael, dive in. Give us your thoughts on this China deal, no deal, where things might be. And in particular, I want a prediction from you. If you think that in the case that there is no deal, are we going to see tariffs, additional tariffs implemented on Sunday?
No, I think Steve's absolutely right about tariffs. Tariffs have worked for the United States from day one of the United States. And I've written about this in the New York Post in one of my Sunday columns there. The president understands that he's in a Cy War against the Chinese. The Chinese are very difficult people to deal with. Speaking as a screenwriter, which is another of my occupations, I have seen more deals go down and just welched on by the Chinese than by anybody else in the world. Their word is almost completely worthless, and everybody in Hollywood knows that.
Why is that? Why do you say that?
They don't believe the contracts are binding. They will tell you circumstances have changed, they will say, and then your contract is dead. So they're very, very difficult to deal with. I also think, perhaps counterintuitively, that they're a paper tiger. I don't think their military can fight. It's way imbalanced in terms of the sex.
I hear Steve Bannon thinking. I'm going to let you finish, Michael, and then I want to get Steve's comments.
Yeah, no, I want to provoke.
No. I think let Michael roll. He's 100. This is 100%. This is correct. This is they've been made up to be a 20-foot giant by the elites in this country. This is the same thing in Britain as in the United States. They were the working class people were sold a bill of goods, both about the EU and China. This is where all the jobs get sent to. The working men get left behind. It's completely phony, and the tariffs are working. The math shows you the tariffs.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact is, look, the Japanese beat them twice in the 1930s. A country the size of Britain basically took over a huge half of the Asian continent. I don't think they can fight. I think their social problems are almost completely intractable thanks to the one-child policy. And the president understands that he is engaging in a kind of Cy War with them. And when he pulls the rug out from underneath them all the time, it seriously disorients them. It's one of the best examples of foreign diplomacy that I've ever seen.
Steve, your thoughts?
Well, no, this is why I think it's. I think this deal's a long way from being over. I think there's another one that President Trump wanted to test it, see how it's playing. You know, he's been strong on tariffs from day one. He's got the Wall Street faction in his ear all the time. But I think we're going to see how this plays out. And I don't think people should be high-fiving. You know, the Wall Street crowd should be not be high-fiving right now until we see how this thing plays out over the weekend and next week. So I think it's like Michael said. I said yesterday on CNBC, they welched on the Hong Kong deal. They welched on the deal they signed with Obama in the Rose Garden in, 2015 on cyber intrusions and the militarization of the South China Sea. They welched on the Paris Accord to carry in those guys. They've got a half a trillion dollars in coal-fired plants. They're building nonstop. They have no intention of living up to any obligations on climate change in the Paris. Of course, the reason Trump backed out of the deal. They haven't lived up to the Lighthizer deal he negotiated. They welched on the October handshake they had in the Oval Office. They don't believe the Chinese Communist Party. This is different than the Chinese people. The Chinese Communist Party does not believe in any contract, right? Circumstances are always changing. So to get it on paper and then to enforce it, I think there's a long way between the cup and the lip here, and I think this has massive implications for 2020.
I think you're right, Steve, and as I used to say when I worked for the president on the campaign and the transition team, you'll know it's official when the president tweets about it. Then we will know that it's a done deal. We are here, episode 70 of War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio. We're here on americasvoice.news. We're obviously on Newsmax TV, fastest growing cable station. Raheem Kassam.
Yeah, I just want to jump in on that. Warroom.org has all the breaking news out of the War Room all day long. It's a great resource for those of you following it. But what's really important as well is you go and you find the podcast on your podcast provider of choice. And we've mentioned some of them on the show. And leave a review and make sure you subscribe. It helps the show reach more people if you do that. And we're very grateful for it.
Critical. So two pieces of breaking news we want to get to while we're still in this segment. Number one, there's a Marquette poll out of Wisconsin voters showing that 52% oppose impeachment. So the numbers continue to move away from the Democrats on this witch hunt. But Steve, probably the biggest news this morning, not named China, White House General Counsel Pat Cipollone will be the lead Senate defender for the president as we get over to there. Interview last night with Mitch McConnell saying that he'd be working hand in hand with Pat as this moves to the Senate. The buried leads, two buried leads, I think really came out of this last 24 hours in this regard, though. This means likely no witnesses in the Senate, or we'll play it by ear, but we know the Senate wants that skinny trial. And also, this also most likely means no USMCA until impeachment in the Senate is over. Steve?
Is that actually in the buried lead? I think it's a major mistake to allow the Senate to wait, as you said the other day, to wait. First of all, I don't think it's a great idea to wait to the new year to do this. I think it's particularly bad to pick it up after the trial. First off, you've got only 30 days from the House that votes for it when it's even active, and so the trial could go longer. But if Pat's selection means there's not actually going to be a trial, that's going to be quite interesting. I just don't believe President Trump, at the end of the day, is going to want to sit there and just listen to these depositions, which are so one-sided, read out loud, and that will be the trial. I think President Trump understands his importance to history. He understands his place in history. He understands he's a transformative president and a historic figure. I believe he's going to want full exoneration. I think he's going to want a full trial and witnesses.
Well, yeah, and he's even directly said he wants to see the whistleblower, which, by the way, it's unconscionable, un-American that we can allow this unnamed, unless you Google his name, whistleblower to go out there and start this entire impeachment witch hunt without ever having to put his name or his face on any of this. Hunter Biden, who is at the center of all of what was going on, being able to point to some of the corruption activity in Ukraine, and Adam Schiff, who's been driving this completely unconstitutional process all along. These three, at a minimum, should be forced to come in and testify in the Senate. Again, nothing formally has been announced as far as witnesses. Probably start off with no witnesses and then make a decision. We know the president wants them. We've got about 30 seconds left in this block. Michael?
Well, real quick about the whistleblower, whose name shall not be mentioned. Apparently his name is Voldemort, but we don't know that. I want to make this point. A lot of people don't understand the intelligence business. If he, in fact, is working for the CIA, and if he, in fact, was deputized to the White House by John Brennan to spy on the President of the United States, both of them are in very serious trouble. The CIA is not allowed to operate inside the United States.
That is a huge point. We'll be back for our final block. We're going to talk Taylor Swift and Hillary Clinton.
Bannon, Miller, Kassam. War Room, Impeachment.
On the John Fredericks Radio Network.
And we are back, episode 70, War Room Impeachment on the John Fredericks Radio Network. Stephen K. Bannon, Raheem Kassam, myself, Jason Miller, special guest today, Michael Walsh. You can always catch us on Newsmax TV, on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, americasvoice.news, all of the podcast platforms. We're on many platforms. And of course, warroom.org. You don't want to miss it. Raheem, why were you talking about Taylor Swift this morning, besides the normal reasons?
Yeah, I'm always talking about Taylor
Swift.
Right.
What, tell us about, but here's a monster megaton bomb that Taylor Swift dropped on a super lib of magnitude proportions last night.
Super lib event, the Billboard Awards Women of the Year event. And Taylor Swift goes up on stage, and some people will be familiar with the fact that she has had this tete-a-tete with her label and the owners of her content. But she goes up there last night and she gives them both barrels. And she names, obviously, not just the person who's behind all the private equity deals that tie up her from even performing some of her previous work, but she also names as one of the funders behind this latest deal to buy her back catalog as the Soros family. And for me,
name checked them. Taylor Swift called out George Soros on the stage.
She called out all the private equity, and she said literally the Soros family are engaged in this. And of course, she's already been called anti-Semitic and all sorts of things on Twitter, nonsensically. But it goes to show, and it goes to show that this is not just, you know, these people are not just tied up in the politics and the Bloombergs and all these guys who really pushed the 2018 midterms flip that has led to this impeachment. They're also targeting now the cultural heroes out there in America, and Taylor Swift being one of those. So I thought very brave of Taylor Swift to do that yesterday. I'm sure there's going to be quite a lot of fallout from it.
Yeah, I imagine she's going to hear it. But you know what? Good for
Taylor.
Well,
her and Soros are never, ever, ever getting back together. Like, ever. That's it.
I mean, you just can't top that. Ladies and gentlemen, Raheem Kassam, he's going to be here all week. One of the other things I want to highlight for folks, Crooked Hillary. We love talking about Crooked Hillary on this program, namely because she's going to be the Democratic nominee, or at least I believe so. She has a, just when you thought she was maybe over with the Howard Stern interview, which is a great interview, by the way, March 6th is the launch date for her Hulu special. Uh-huh. And so it's this whole series, and it is all the greatest hits. It's the, every losing presidential candidate does this when they go out, and if only people saw the real me, if they saw how things were behind the scenes. You have Hillary, you have Bill, you have everyone.
If only they'd run screaming from the room if they saw the real Hillary.
But folks, hear me now, believe me later, she is absolutely running. We're coming up here on 10 o'clock when the House Judiciary Committee is going to start voting. Shocker, it's going to be a party line vote. They'll clear it out of committee, go to rules committee over the weekend to figure out how much time they'll debate on the House floor and such. Probably see floor debates start on Monday and Tuesday, and then next Wednesday is when we're now hearing the final vote will be. Steve, we got 30 seconds left. Any final words?
Fantastic show. People should stay tuned today for the Judiciary Committee vote. We'll be here all weekend. Guests, breaking news, Saturday, Sunday, 7 days a week live until the day after the acquittal of Donald J. Trump, the 45th President of the United States.
Absolutely. And as Raheem is throwing up the signals, warroom.org. Please visit warroom.org. Ladies and gentlemen, have a great weekend, but take your podcasting device with you, because we'll be live every day on War Room Impeachment.